Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Michael Grosso, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6000. So, Bob, what's running around in your mind today?
Oh, you don't want to know what's running around in my mind. But I was thinking about our guest tonight, Dr. Grosso. We're going to be talking with him shortly about a book he wrote, The Final Choice. But one of the things that we'll be asking him, I thought I would run by you to see what your opinion is before we hear from
Dr. Grosso.
Yeah, well, so we look around today. And we see trouble. I mean, we see mass shootings. We see natural, you know, catastrophes. We see wars with famine. There's a whole lot going on. A lot of it, you know, not good. So we're also faced with the possibility that I lived through years ago with the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, the possibility of nuclear war. So you wonder, with all these things going on, and everybody, of course, is aware of it, is that a stimulus to people to explore what they really are and what happens after death? Or is the opposite true? People just throw up their hands and say, well, there's nothing I can do about it anyways. Life is short. Let me just, you know, go about my business and have the most fun that I can and get the most toys that I can.
Right.
So it could go either way.
It does go either way because you have a mixed population out there. It's not like it was back in the 60s where you got all your information from reliable news sources and it trickled down into everyday life. So for those of us who were around during the missile crisis, those of us who were in school had to learn how to duck and cover in case, you know, we got blown up. Somehow we were going to be protected by getting underneath our desk and putting our hands over our head. And people built fallout shelters in their yards, and that was what was going on back then. Now, communication is very different, and so something that's as serious as what we're facing right now, which, granted, is probably way more serious than it was back during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it gets watered down because so much stuff is on the internet that people, A, spend their time with that stuff, and B, get bad information on what's really happening. So do they question their mortality? I think people every day, intelligent people question what happens to them. Sometimes they'll dismiss it, and sometimes they'll sit quietly and go through all the things, and some of them will go on the internet or to libraries and research it. I think that always exists. I just think that the population of curious people is diminishing. And so you don't have as many people out there, percentage-wise, that are saying, "Oh my goodness, what's gonna happen what's gonna happen to me or to my soul or to my personality if the whole world blows up?"
Yeah, and again, I mean, you mentioned that it was different back, you know, like in the '60s, but we didn't have instant information, so we were not aware of a lot of the things that were going on. We were not aware of these, you know, disastrous events, both natural and man-made, for the most part. You know, now you can just click on your iPhone or you click on your tablet and you have information on what's happening everywhere, bombarded by information. So that, that may have something to do with people that have certain mental illness, and it feeds into that, you know, the neuroses and paranoia. But I think that eventually that this is a catalyst, you know, for people to say, hey, look, there's got to be some meaning and purpose, and there has to be something more. We're more than our physical bodies. And I know that Dr. Grosso has some interesting theories about that, so I look forward to asking him. We did just get done recently with a nice event with the Afterlife Luncheon.
It was magnificent, absolutely magnificent. And the attendees enjoyed it. The feedback has been wonderful. We had two wonderful presenters. We had Leslie Kane, who wrote Surviving Death. She's a New York Times bestselling investigative journalist, and she presented on evidence of an afterlife. And then she was followed by our own Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson, whose book also was a New York Times bestseller, and that was The Light Between Us. And she did both spirit communication and Q&A for the audience, and it was a phenomenal day. We had a wonderful luncheon, and it was a great, great, beautiful, rainy day in New York, and people loved being there.
And we have another one on tap.
May 6th.
May 6th, and that we have another excellent medium that'll be taking part in Kim Russo, right?
Kim Russo.
We'll have more details on that on the website.
Recently published a book called The Happy Medium, which is her surname also.
Right, and I know that we're now turning our attention to the Florida
Winter Grief Retreat in Fort Myers, Florida. It is two-thirds full. And so we're down into the home stretch of people making their last-minute reservations.
And, again, those grief retreats, I mean, we enjoy doing them very much because it has some transformative properties to it, you know, of affecting grief in a positive way. And it's a well-rounded, well-designed program with not only mediumship, but with grief professionals. And most important, you're surrounded by people who know how you feel. And there's some therapeutic value to that in and of itself.
It's a huge part of the program is that you don't have to be afraid that you're going to express yourself the wrong way or you're going to do something wrong because everybody's wearing the same shoes.
All right. So we are anxious to get going with Dr. Michael Grosso. So we're going to take our break now. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us, and we'll be joined by Dr. Grosso.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, we have been talking with, we're going to be talking with Dr. Michael Grosso. Our sponsor tonight is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Michael Grosso is an independent scholar. He's part of an ever-growing group of scholars and thinkers that are critical of the prevailing materialistic view of the world. Michael is a teacher, author, painter. His interests span psychical research, metaphysical art, the parapsychology of religion, and primarily philosophy. He received his Ph.D. in philosophy and studied classical Greek at Columbia University. He's taught at the City of University of New York, Marymount Manhattan College, and the City University of New Jersey. He's published books on topics ranging from life after death to the mythologies of end time. He's affiliated with the Division of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia, on the board of directors of the American Philosophical Practitioners Association. He conducts wisdom seminars, which are discussion groups that apply philosophy to problems of everyday life. And his current book, which is a rewrite of an earlier work, is called The Final Choice, Death or Transcendence. Michael writes a great blog. I can give you the address. It's consciousnessunbound.blogspot.com, but it might be easier just to go on the Forever Family Foundation website. There's a blog page, and Michael's blog is right there. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Bob. I'm glad to be here with you.
And we're glad to have you. You know, somebody picks up your book, sees the title, not knowing anything about the book, the first reaction to the title might be that, well, we have a choice whether we expire into nothingness or we move on to an enlightened world. But that's not exactly where you're going with this book, is it?
Not quite. Actually, in the early part of the book, I kind of say that the choice, the final choice, is a kind of rhetorical suggestion. Now, we're in a period of tremendous crisis. I don't think anyone needs to be persuaded about that idea. And so I think the challenge, the death with transcendence, is sort of, in a sense, what we're facing. We're facing great global dangers nowadays in a way that's really quite unique in history. You know, I wrote a book on the millennium myth and the recurrent fantasy of the end of the world, and I got tired of listing dates where different prophets and predictors would say, okay, the world's going to end on this day, you know, in 6 months and so on. Of course, it never happened. Oddly enough, we're at a stage in history where even people, serious, gravely self-contained scholars are talking about the end of modern civilization, world civilization, and so forth. You know, and the trends, there are definite trends moving in this direction, sort of with a kind of inevitableness, which is quite frightening. For one thing, the climate change. I mean, this thing is a process that's going on. A lot of people deny it. A few people really do who know anything about science. And this is one of the major trends pushing us toward a possible, you know, large-scale global disaster. In addition, just the other day, a book has come out by Helen Caldicott called Sleepwalking Toward Armageddon. She was back in the 1980s when I first wrote my book, The Final Choice, she was a leading anti-nuclear activist and was warning us. Her latest book just came out a couple of days ago. It says we've never been closer. I hate to say this. It's a frightening thought to just disseminate, so to speak, but lots of people are saying this, and it looks that way to me, that we have nine nations on the planet right now who have nuclear weapons, and as we speak, they're expending all of their money, not all of their money, but investing vast sums of money to upgrade their systems and their nuclear weaponry and their powers to, defend themselves against other nuclear enemies. So there are so many indications of instability today that I think that we're it's a little bit like, I draw the analogy in my book between the near-death experience of an individual, and what I suggest in the book is that we may be entering a stage where civilization as a whole is entering a kind of a stage of near death. But that sounds grim and horrible and all that. But the positive, message that I have come up with through my own sort of life and study, and I hope others may share that sense, that as in a near-death experience, the classic one that we know about, that there are so many books written about, one comes to the close of the thing we dread most, and somehow the world opens up, or the mind opens up to a whole new dimension of reality, and as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware, there are on the threshold of death, not all of the time, not everybody that has this experience, but it happens consistently enough to tell us that it is a real potential for all of us and possibly even for the whole of humanity in terms of our futuristic development. But these near-death experiences are enlightenment experiences. They are experiences in which people are transformed. They acquire new powers. They see things differently. They see another reality, a world to come. They walk away convinced, absolutely convinced, that there is another dimension of reality, just as has been believed by most people since the beginning of history, but as you know, of course, since the rise of science, which in itself is a marvelous piece of human progress. But scientific progress has been along the lines of materialism. It's material science that we excel at. And in the process, the traditional beliefs of different peoples, different cultures, different religions have taken a big blow, so to speak. So we're in this state of uncertainty and danger right now. And so I'm suggesting, and I find myself meditating on this theme in different ways, and I talk about it in the book, that we may also be entering into a period where opportunities for growth, development, situations where human potential under the stress and duress of the world's challenges, that we're going to see a lot of a kind of maybe even a spiritual renaissance. Anyway, what I try to do in the book is paint a picture of the crisis and then sketch for the reader a variety of areas which contain the potential for coping with that great crisis.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what I meant by that title.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting concept about a global near-death experience. You know, that can be a catalyst. And of course, we know from near-death experiences that you don't actually have to be at the brink of death to have an NDE. And perhaps that plays into it. I mean, we all can feel the trauma of possible impending doom. Maybe that's enough to shake us up and to go through this simulated dark tunnel into enlightenment. So it's a very interesting concept, and I think we're inching closer and closer to it. Fran and I were at the top of the show, we're having this discussion, you know, as we inch closer to the nuclear obliteration and climatic catastrophe and all these things that are going on, it could go two ways. I mean, people could throw up their hands and say, well, there's nothing we could do about it, and we might as well continue path to materialist wealth. Or it could make one seek meaning and purpose and spiritual awakening. So I don't know what the majority of the population, which direction they'll go. I guess it's your hope that they're going to swing towards self-exploration, right?
Well, it seems that way, and it seems that I do think that it's sort of an involuntary process. It's, you know, every time we hear about these terrible shootings, for example, and it's amazing how the people respond. I mean, I was present I live in Charlottesville, and I was not present when that car ran over the group of people, but I saw the film. It was filmed, and I was amazed by the courage of some of the people around that jumped on that car to try to stop it. And in other words, the crisis sometimes, I believe, and I'm a kind of an optimist about the inner benign potential of human beings, the higher potentials, I'm optimistic that in crises, we are tested, and some of us can go bad and try to exploit them. But I do think the largest trend or the impulse of the average human being is to respond in a creative and sometimes even heroic way. So, as you were describing a minute ago, yeah, that is my sense, that as we get closer and it becomes increasingly obvious that we got to do something, I think there may be all kinds of changes and spiritual awakenings. I couldn't begin to try to predict it in detail. That's the amazing thing about human beings. We never know what people are going to do, how they are going to evolve. But I think it's important to get our heads focused on the possibilities that are latent within us and within other people. That, I think, is a help, rather than to be buried under pessimistic, you know, and gloomy sense of the limitations of human beings.
Yeah. I like the term that you use of transcendent psi, transcending, you know, time and space, seeing beyond our physical shackles. This all requires some inherent non-physical ability. Do you think that it's by design that we were given psi ability for that very purpose of recognizing a greater reality, a reality beyond the physical?
Well, yeah, I think that we are made in such a way that we have bodies and brains, and our brains are designed to enable us to adapt to the physical environment. But there is also a mental dimension. A lot of scientists tend to want to neglect this or forget it for reasons which we needn't go into. But I think that once we succeed in temporarily somehow deflecting our attention and stop using our brain just to feed our bellies and make money, so to speak, but to use our brains as a as an instrument through which we can become more aware of these transcendent potentials that are within us, that we can perhaps learn to attune ourselves more readily, or sometimes when the crisis is thrust upon us, it just happens. Things just open up. You just do things that you never thought you could do before. I think I have a story in the book somewhere. Maybe I have it written elsewhere. I remember driving with a friend onto a highway and losing control of the car.
That's in the book.
It is in the book. And I went spinning across the oncoming traffic. And in that instant, Bob, I knew there was nothing I can do. And this is the most frightening thing you could imagine. You're facing possible death, right? What happened, involuntarily, I started to get very calm and serene, almost withdrawn from what was happening. And I felt like it was an incipient near-death experience because I was going out of my body and I was calm and serene as I was, you know, confronting this immediate. I mean, time slowed up. My whole sense of time changed. And, of course, obviously, I got escaped. I mean, they got across that, across the highway and landed on the other side and were not struck. And I remember saying, let's just keep going, because if I stop and think about this, I'm going to lose it. So that's just an example of a totally unexpected sort of change of consciousness that occurred in me. It was very brief, but it taught me something, that there are latent potentials. I mean, that's just one tiny little example of, you know, so many others that one could come up with.
Yeah.
So it's my sense that we need to become more aware of those hidden potentials within us in everyday life, as well as in preparation for larger challenges in life.
I know you also you had that experience, and I know you mentioned you had personally had a few out-of-body experiences, but what struck me in one of them, you mentioned that you feared getting lost in mental space.
Right.
Explain that.
Well, I can remember that. You know, the amazing thing about these experiences that you have, I mean, I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. It's complete oblivion, right? But these high moments of your life, they stay. But I remember this as though it occurred yesterday, and it was an ordinary morning. I woke up, opened my eyes, and then suddenly I was out of my body, hovering in front of a window. And I was staring out, and I knew I was not in my bed, not in my body. And I peered out into the dazzling blue sky, and I knew that all I had to do was will it. And I would have shot right through that window into the blue sky of the morning. But then I had a thought, and I got anxious. I thought to myself, hey, this never happened to me before. I didn't even think that many words. It just flashed through me, like, heck, I may not make it back. I don't know where I'm going. So I became a little anxious, and instantly I snapped back into my body. And I wish I was a little more courageous at that moment. I might have learned more. But, yeah, there's an element of fear that holds us back.
Absolutely. And, I related to that when I read it, because in the few instances that I found myself, you know, drifting into uncharted waters, I also experienced that fear of getting lost and not being able to make it back. So I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, must face. I think it's also a fear that people have when it comes to survival of consciousness. You know, that people fear that all memories will be lost, and they'll merge into, you know, a greater consciousness with no identity. Everybody seems to want be able to retain their identity. The evidence...
That makes a lot of sense, and I think that is true. I mean, even if the promise or the prospect is sublime and mysterious and open and inviting, there's still a timidity about us. And I'm no different. Obviously, I just confessed my timidity. But so there is where I think some kind of a practice. You know, I have a chapter in the book on crafts of dying. A strange thing to talk about, but we're so afraid of death that we sometimes recoil from doing the very things that would free us permanently from the fear of death. In other words, going beyond the limits of our ordinary consciousness, but there is a fear there. And I think that so many people, I've talked with people, I remember when I was teaching philosophy, I used to hang out with some of my colleagues and talk to them about these things, and almost without fail, they recoiled. And there were two guys in particular, and I won't go into the details, but engaging them, it occurred to me, these guys are more afraid of death than I am. But unlike me, I'm looking and open to evidence that they may take me beyond that fear. But they're so afraid of death that they don't even use the word or think about it and listen to me talk about what might happen to you, like in an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience. So I left them alone. I ain't going to bother them. I don't want to scare them.
Right. Just so much you can do.
Right.
I often get into conversations with people who wonder why some religions, like Catholicism, for example, frown upon psi phenomena or communication with the dead. But the church actually has a rich history with such things. I know you've written about it. So, isn't it odd that?
Well, it is. But you know what it is. I mean, it's the fear of the dark side. Now, even take the case of levitation, which I recently wrote, actually two books about the levitation of a famous Catholic saint, and so the church. The Inquisition was aware, the people, they were aware that this friar was having these ecstatic experiences and that he would frequently levitate in public. And so they didn't worry about or question the reality of that phenomenon, as most scientists would today, and even Catholics, by the way, conservative Catholics. What they were worried about was, what was causing it? What was he? In other words, the alternative was that a diabolic agency in force was behind the levitations. As a matter of fact, if you look into the literature of so-called possession, there's a couple of wonderful books out recently that study the phenomenon of possession in the Christian world. It turns out that a lot of possessed people, and you may remember there was a famous movie there, The Exorcist, where the girl levitates, right? So
yeah.
the diabolically possessed throughout the history of the church have been noted to sometimes behave in these physically strange ways. So they got to be sure that these phenomena are coming from, we'll call it the divine side rather than the diabolic side. Whereas the problem of modern scientists is there any side at all to this, that any point at all to talking about these things? Their minds are completely shut. But the religions can have very complicated and sometimes devious and totally unfair. I mean, Joseph, for example, was placed under house arrest for almost his entire life. The Inquisition had their eyes on him because he had so many powers, so many abilities, that he could have started a cult of his own, you see, and challenged the authority of the church because people were fascinated and in awe of his amazing powers. But in fact, he wasn't like that at all. He was just a very modest guy and did not want to challenge the church, even though the church gave him a hard time. So in the end, after he died, he's sort of harmless, then they made him a saint.
Yeah, and then to remind our listeners, that book, there's an excellent book, St. Joseph of Cupertino.
The Man Who Could Fly.
The Man Who Could Fly. So.
Yeah, the man who could fly. That'll. And then the other one I recently, just recently published is called Wings of Ecstasy. And for that the benefit of that book is that we've translated one of the best biographies of Joseph from the 17th century. And you can see the kind of world he lived in that encouraged these strange phenomena. And also his adventures, you know, with the dangers of becoming too famous and being harassed by the church and all of that. So the whole story is there. It's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And page after page of eyewitness testimony of him doing not only the levitating, all kinds of strange phenomena that today we call paranormal.
Right. We are talking with Dr. Michael Grosso. The book we are discussing is The Final Choice, Death or Transcendence. We have more to talk about. We're going to go to a break. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dr. Michael Grosso. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Here are some updates on Forever Family Foundation events and happenings. We know that there was a waiting list for those who were closed out of our annual grief retreat this past July in Chester, Connecticut. And while our upcoming winter grief retreat in warm and beautiful Florida is not until this coming January 5th through 7th, that's 2018, that too now is almost filled. So if you are considering attending, now is the time to try and see if it's going to fit into your schedule. We also remind you that we do have a no-refund policy, so before booking, make absolutely sure that you want to attend. The weekend is a fabulous weekend where 50 guests come from across the globe to spend an all-inclusive weekend with like-minded people in a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. The weekend features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joseph Scheel, Janet Nohavik, and Doreen Malloy, who will be working alongside Dr. Mohanna and the rest of our professional staff. Our first annual afterlife luncheon, but I believe it's going to be more than just annual now, was a great success. It was held this past October 29th. It was enjoyed by all so much that we've scheduled the next one for May 6th, 2018, with author of The Happy Medium, none other than The Happy Medium herself, Forever Family Foundation certified medium Kim Russo. So save the date and watch for our registration page to go up on our website. Our Holidays Past raffle drawing is next month on December 23rd, so please help us out and buy some raffles, lots of raffles, to win as many as 5 readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Eliza Ray, Catherine Nadal, and Neil Zapowski. It's only $5 to enter. And remember to always check the events page on our website regularly for all information on our events and announcements, and that's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And remember that all reservations can be made online. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. Lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Okay, back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Michael Grosso. The book is The Final Choice, Death or Transcendence. Michael, you mentioned briefly, you know, science and science today. Everybody seems to go to science for all their answers and science practices. Materialist reductionism fosters the belief that we are our bodies and there's nothing beyond. And you mentioned you think that science needs to recover its conscience and its consciousness. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the there are scientists and philosophers, I should say, they work together. That have been committed since the 17th century and the rise of, you know, the new physics, new astronomy. They're working, science has developed and evolved and become very efficient in its ability to understand the physical world and to control it and to produce all kinds of effects. The Industrial Revolution would not have been possible without science. Quantum mechanics makes modern communication technologies possible. So all of these are real and sometimes often beneficial benefits, and they're so concrete and they dominate our consciousness. I just used the word consciousness. So the consequence has been that traditionally the scientists, the way it has evolved in the Western world, has come to make the mistake that because we have been very successful in understanding the physical world and can control it in so many marvelous ways and do all kinds of technological things with this science, that is the only reality, forgetting that they would not have been able to do these, perform these scientific understandings or these technological solutions to so many facets of life without using their minds. And, I mean, this is a philosophical question. I find it hard to believe that there are highly intelligent people out there that think consciousness is an illusion, or that our minds are really basically nothing but our brains. But there are so many ways to refute that. But some of the easiest ways, most obvious ways, would be examples of the paranormal mental activity. If I'm able to pick up the thoughts of a person 100 miles away without any physical connection, and we know that's, you know, we call that telepathy, that tells me that there's more to my consciousness, that my consciousness can and does escape the limitations of what the brain permits me to be conscious of. So there are numerous ways that we can argue, and we can't do this over the radio in a minute, right? But there are many, many ways that many philosophers and many scientists, too, can argue for the reality of the mind and consciousness, the inner life, but it's a minority position nowadays. I could tell you stories about myself and colleagues of mine who are deprived of the opportunity to say things, publish things, even teach things in our sort of highly materialistic culture, where it's just not, you just can't do it. I mean, the New York Review of Books, for example, published about a year ago two articles on the topic of science and the afterlife. And I was delighted to see that, but it turned out that both of those articles had no science whatsoever. They were just attacks on popular books about life after death. So I wrote them a letter, a very carefully crafted, polite letter. They didn't publish it. It's the kind of thing that happens over and over again. I've done this on many occasions where I've tried to get letters published, or even my book on the Oxford University Press had published my book, was about to publish my book on St. Joseph's Levitations. At the last minute, one philosopher jumps out of his hole and says, we can't have this book published for in our publishing industry. He has to tone down the claims on the levitations. I refused to do it. That was the whole point of the book.
Right.
Demonstrate these extraordinary phenomena. So I lost that I lost them as a publisher. But everyone else, all the other people who approved, including the editor, loved my book. But the prejudice is so strong that I lost my voice. So that's where I say conscience. The word conscience and consciousness almost mean the same thing. They're related etymologically. Does conscience does make cowards of us all, is a famous line in Hamlet. And, you know, your conscience is your consciousness of yourself. So what I'm saying is that the scientists have just backing away from whole parts of human experience, whole dimensions of human experience that don't fit into their narrow reductionistic scientific worldview. And that, to me, is a kind of a crime. It's a crime against the human spirit.
Yeah, and it's such a shame because, I mean, by the very definition of science, I mean, it means, you know, open and independent exploration. You know,
exactly. Scientifically.
You know, and that filters down, too, because there's not only professional bias, but we see it every day. And when people open up about experiences, and in many cases, they've never repeated what they tell us to anybody else for years, 10 years, 15,
right.
for fear of being judged or ridiculed or
right.
something.
Right.
wouldn't we all be in a much better place if we simply shared what we experienced to know? And that holds true for the science world as well. So I certainly understand. You had another interesting concept which I hadn't heard of, the opposite of this materialist reductionism, the concept of reduction. And by reduction, can you just briefly explain what?
I think I know what you're referring to. The reduction in connection with phenomenology, is that where?
Yeah, I think of removing some of the materialist thinking and engaging in practices of more inner contemplation than.
Right. That's a somewhat confusing term because reductionism is a negative concept in one sense. The way we were just talking about it, but the phenomenologists talked about just reducing your awareness to your immediate experience and dropping all your theories and assumptions. So, for example, if somebody goes to to their doctor, let's say, and says their psychiatrist, and says, "Hey, I saw the ghost of my father yesterday. He appeared, his apparition of me, and he smiled at me, and it made me feel good." And now, the psychiatrist says that the immediate reaction might very well be, "Well, you probably ate something funny last night." So he brings in a theory and reduces it immediately to a mere hallucination. But the phenomenologists who were, it's like a style of doing philosophy, said, "Look, forget about the theories. Just pay attention to what you experience and describe it. And later on, we can try to understand it and interpret it." But see, that is a very common and ordinary thing that we can do to get along better in life. When people present themselves to us, strangers, they have a different color, they have a different background, they're poor or they're rich or whatever they are, the tendency is to project or categorize them, explain them, and in effect explain them away. The great challenge for human beings is to be open, not naive and totally stupid. I'm not talking about that, but be open and receptive. What is the experience that the person's having? Let them describe it in a simple way. What is your mood? What is your feeling? Where are you at? And I'm not going to try to explain you away before I give you a full listening, or ever, In other words, we need to learn to be open to each other and sort of remove that abstract propensity and tendency to want to reduce everybody to a category.
Yeah. Perhaps when we all have our global NDE, we'll be able to understand that concept of reduction more. We have been talking with Dr. Michael Grosso. The book, which we recommend, is The Final Choice, Death or Transcendence. Michael's blog, consciousnessunbound.blogspot.com, or just go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org blog page. Michael, thanks so much for being with us. There's so much more to talk about, but we'll have to do it another time if you're willing.
I am, and it was a pleasure talking with you. Okay, Bob?
Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
All right. Good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Ashley Jackson, Anthony Joseph or Casey, Robin Murray, Peter Pye, Peanut Enton, Fred Folger, Michael Tim, David Haith, Glenna Irwin, Marianne Pierushka, Diane Archangel, Isabel Ginsberg, Vince Mattia, Lauren Ramnap, Rich LeBly, Helen Montalto, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Ingram, Tina Young, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Veronica James, Alex Hanna, Catherine Pye, Max Banken, Linda Ellis, Eddie Coons, Sandy Rabo, Ed O'Brien. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.